This is the Are You Screwed podcast.
Hello, sir. This is Jonathan from Sears. Do you have a moment for a survey?
I'm sorry, I did not.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
Sir, just one question, if you don't mind.
Shut up, working on.
Sir, is your refrigerator running?
Give your picks and move on. This is Adam's segment, you idiot.
I will ruin Rutgers.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
Virtual reality sex machine.
Oh.
The freshman out of Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania.
The Are You Screwed podcast.
He's bitty bad.
Gianna.
Mike, get your picks ready.
Gianna.
I predict that I'm going to get blackout drunk at every tailgate so I don't have to watch the game.
This one's always in the books. Jacob Young dribbles it out and it is over in Indy. The Scarlet Knights of Rutgers with their first NCAA tournament victory in 38 years.
They said they wanted them dancing, but not in the nightclubs. I think this was the type of dancing they were talking about.
Oh, well, fellas, 38 long years Rutgers fans have been waiting, and it actually happened. It actually happened. We're doing an emergency podcast as Rutgers, they're one win away from the Sweet 16. They're in the round of 32. They beat Clemson. They've got Houston coming up. It's kind of crazy to believe. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Max, you've got birds chirping in the background. It's nice out. You're outside.
You know what's funny? I was deciding. I was like, "Where am I gonna sit?" And I go outside. I'm like, "Well, obviously, everyone knows it's. I mean, if you don't live in New Jersey, I guess it's nice out. It's nice today. Like it's in like the low 50s, and I'm hearing all these birds. And I'm like, this is gonna be annoying on the podcast. So I'm like, you know what? No, this is a sunny, bright day, and I think the people want to hear the birds. The birds are chirping just a little bit nicer today for Rutgers fans. The sun is shining just a little bit brighter. So I think the ambiance will be appreciated. Or maybe it'll be annoying. I don't know. I don't care. I don't have to listen to it. I don't care.
Well, in movies, what symbolizes kind of a beautiful new start, a new day? It's right when they have the birds chirping in the window and stuff. And like, that's your cue to know that the main character is like doing well. And I think that's pretty emblematic right now, right? For how this Rutgers team is doing.
Before then the credits roll, and right before that, they give you the update right at the end of any like basketball movie of like what happened, and like it'll be all good and sunshine, and then all of a sudden the credits gonna come in a little bit and be like, and the season ended probably tomorrow. But either way, right now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it ends when Rutgers plays Houston, because we got to have the joy of seeing them win an NCAA tournament game. I'm sure we're going to get to probably some talk of what's been going on with Geo Baker and everything with the players inside the bubble in Indianapolis. There's a lot to get to. Can we start with the game, I assume?
You guys want to start with the end of the game? I was thinking about where we wanted to start.
Yeah, wherever you want to start.
So, like, there's like 37 seconds left. Sims of Clemson travels and Rutgers gets the ball back, and you're looking at it, and Clemson, I think, had five fouls at that point. So you're thinking they're going to foul Rutgers twice, send him to the line. They played it out. Thank you. Thank you to Clemson for not turning it into a free throw shooting battle.
That would have been bad.
Because like Rutgers has improved. They showed the graphic on the game last night. I didn't realize they had improved that much free throw shooting over the last half of the season. I think they were shooting 70% over the past 13 games. But we still didn't want to see that where Rutgers is at the line, especially for one and ones. And like Clemson's plan was to, with 37 seconds left, play it out with no timeouts left. Sure. Thank you. Because like worst case scenario, Rutgers throws up a brick and it takes a huge bounce off the backboard and then, off the rim. And then it's for loose. And then Clemson has to scramble and score before the buzzer with no timeout. Sure. Clemson. Thank you. Thank you from all Rutgers fans for playing that out the way that you did. And then that last play, God, that was a terrible pass by,
I don't understand what was going on there.
I don't know what was going on other than the fact that, I mean, maybe they thought keep the ball in the hands of Geo Baker, because if they're going to foul, that's who you probably want for the most part on the free throw line. And it wound up being a situation where I think we were going to see what we usually see. Our buddy Joey Downs said it on the episode previously. Rutgers runs horns. They basically fake some screens. Geo Baker is open for an ISO. He'll step back. He'll shoot. That was pretty much the plan until they figured out if they weren't. The plan seemed to be don't foul, try and double and get the hands out of Baker. Get the ball out of Baker's hands and see what kind of chaos they could ensue. It was just crazy. I was with you, Max. I'm like, they're going to foul here. This is the smart thing to do is to foul, extend this game, put Rutgers at the line. I mean, what were they, 6 of 9, I believe, yesterday at the free throw line?
Yeah, nice. I just think that even if Rutgers was a good free throw shooting team, that's the play, right? You're down 2:30. You have no timeouts, 36, 37 seconds left. Like, what are you doing?
No, I think you could try to trap real quick first, and if the trap leads to a foul, you're okay.
Oh, sure, but they weren't even doing that. They weren't all that aggressive. They were just straight playing it out. Like,
yeah, that was a confusing part. It was like not try to force a turnover at least, or like a, you know, kind of get Rutgers offense moving where they make a bad decision into a bad shot.
And listen, for all the crazy things we've seen, the Joe Wieskamp insane diagonal shot that goes off a backboard. Something bounced Rutgers' way for once, and it happened at the biggest moment that anybody could have hoped for, where Geo Baker, I mean, I get what he was trying to do, and I like the cut that Ron was making, and Sims made a good defensive play, and somehow it bounced right back to him. It was perfect all around. That was the moment right there when it went in. I mean, I look real quickly. I'm like, there's like it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
With no timeouts left. That was also part of it. Part of the question or the shaking your head at what Clemson was doing, because if Rutgers scores, the game's obviously over with no timeouts in like 5 seconds. Man, it's such a wonderful, stupid tournament. They got so many bounces. How many times it was nothing going on offense? The ball bounces around. Oh, and Caleb McConnell's just under the rim somehow, open for a layup.
He had like three of those, right?
I think he had three. Miles Johnson, I think his only point or his only bucket of the game was on like an air ball three by Mathis at the end of the shot clock. And then it just landed right in Johnson's hand and he laid it in. And it's just like, that's just how it goes in this tournament. Like you don't necessarily deserve to win. It doesn't really matter. And you just like, it was funny. How great was it at halftime? When Seth Davis kept cracking jokes about the game, like what was the line at one point where it was, Houston will take on the winner of this game if anyone actually wins this game. Like, oh God,
it was everybody was trying to like, Barkley was trying to give his lingo to try and make it be like, well, this is kind of entertaining, but no, it really isn't. And even Greg Gumbel was at one point. I mean, it was just amazing. You know, the whole day itself was kind of it's surreal.
I'm gonna be honest. This isn't taken away from the game and how fun it was and Rutgers winning. I had a nervous breakdown with like 4 minutes left in the first half where I just started yelling at my TV as Rutgers has another offensive possession where nothing happens. And I just started, I hate this. This isn't basketball. I can't watch. This is terrible. I had like a nervous breakdown. My not wife was sitting there just cracking up because I just had like a nervous breakdown. Like just yelling, I hate this over and over and over again.
But we got
here. We are. We did. They won, I guess. Yeah.
They won. You know, the game was for the most part, I guess, what we probably should have expected. Just, you know, two really bleh teams at times. Like, what was Mike? I know one thing that you had brought up on our text chain, and I think it kind of goes. I watched Sims early on in that game, and I was like, they're going to be in trouble. And they did a very good job the rest of that game, for the most part, containing him. Did that surprise anybody?
But what I think that the thing with Sims, and we see it with like, you know, with Ron Harper Jr. too, where you see what they're capable of, but then you also kind of look at the positions that the offenses that they play for don't really put them in position to like take advantage of their skill sets. So even though someone like Sims is incredibly scary, Clemson doesn't really do a good enough job offensively as far as like ball movement and creating space for him to operate. So like as scary as he was, it was kind of like a thing you see with Rutgers often where it's like someone like Ron Harper Jr. is kind of neutralized by the lack of creativity offensively. So even though you saw what Sims could do, I at no point was like, this guy's going to take over the game. You could see how kind of Rutgers-esque the Clemson offense was. Man, those two teams are similar.
Well, I just like once they started, I didn't know anything about him, but then they said at the top of the broadcast how like he led them in everything basically. And once they started just like dumping it into him for post-ups, I was like, okay, I don't see how this is a concern. Because Miles Johnson really did a great job defending him down low. He was really a problem for Rutgers when they got him in space, whether it was in transition or doing stuff off the top of the key. That's when I thought he really hurt Rutgers. But like there, it seemed like their first half plan especially was like, let's get some post-ups without realizing this Miles Johnson guy is a pretty good defender who's like 7'1", 270, and Sims is not going to bully him down there.
I think, too, we could talk about it here. We've made the joke forever, and maybe they're going to have to do this against Houston. We don't know what the Miles Johnson injury status is, but at the end of the game, he has to come out because he's hurt, and on the final possession there, defensively for Rutgers, the one that was going to count, I know it's easy to say, like, Steve Peichel had no other option but to put Ron Harper on Sims there, but it would not have surprised me to see Cliff going out there in that last stop. Thankfully, he didn't do it. And I'm just happy that we saw that come to fruition. And it was it happens. It doesn't mean that Cliff wouldn't have been able to do it. It just was the right thing to do. And I don't know. That was the icing on the cake for yesterday.
It was at the end of a big game, Steve Peichel saying, I'm putting the five players on the floor who I trust the most right now. It wasn't like, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter that they didn't have a big on the floor. It was, these are the five guys that I trust more than anyone else on the team, and I'm putting them in. And he's often kind of seems, like, limited by the idea that there always needs to be, like, a center on the floor. I mean, we've covered this so much over the years. But, like, when it came down to it, it was, Miles Johnson is out. I need to put five guys on the floor who I trust. And at this point, it just wasn't going to be Cliff Amorier in the final minute. And they got it done. Now, if Miles can't play on Sunday or tomorrow, that's going to make for some interesting rotations, because we're obviously going to see Cliff and Mamadou. And I think we'll probably see Reber too. Like, I think we will. Maybe 10 minutes apiece from those guys, maybe more from Cliff. I have no idea, but it's going to be interesting if Miles can't go. And I would assume he's not going to play. I mean, we have no info. Peichel was asked about it this morning, and he was pretty evasive. I mean, they're not going to answer, right? They're not going to give any kind of tips to Houston as to what's going on. But I would assume, based on what we saw, that Miles Johnson will not play tomorrow. And it's going to be interesting to see what they'll do with the rotation.
I was wondering, too, with playing Harper at center for those final possessions defensively especially, if Sims was still going to try to play out of the low post, I thought it actually would have made some sense to have Cliff in there. But because they tried to get Sims moving in space, Harper, I think, was the better play. I don't know if that's what Peichel was thinking as well, just like defensively. And so against Houston, from what I understand, like I said, I don't know anything about Houston at all, but it seems like they have a bunch of 6'7" people, right? Like, they're not especially tall.
Our buddy Brian Fonseca has said that they are the Steve Peichel team on steroids. That's his quote, in the fact that they are so ridiculously good efficiency-wise on defense, and offense, they're in a totally different category as well, too. They are the dream scenario in terms of what you're looking for with, like, the style. They're not a big team, but Grimes is their best player. I think he was the one that was out with the hip pointer yesterday, and still don't know if he's going to play. But, they're a good team.
We've got a non-update from Steve Peichel on Miles Johnson. This is from Rutgers Sports Insider and Sarge. He's getting treated. He won't practice today. Hopefully he'll be okay. Don't know anything more than that until he tries to move.
What's getting treated?
Well, Sarge threw in parentheses, the ankle. Okay. I mean, who knows? I didn't think it was an ankle injury. It looked like every, not saying he like tore his Achilles or anything, cause I'm not a doctor, but it looked like every Achilles injury I've ever seen.
You just play one on the podcast.
No, like, I'm not saying
every NBA fan now. No, is I know, like an I know. Achilles expert.
Yes,
like,
of course. We've seen it too
saying,
many times.
I'm not saying he tore his Achilles. Like, I have no idea. But it looked like every aggravation of any Achilles that I've ever seen. So, I mean, who knows?
Can we give some props to the cog of last night's game and Aaron Brightman's favorite player in Caleb McConnell? Because without Caleb, they that was a hell of a time to have an NCAA tournament double-double. I mean, when he came back this year, And at the time of it, I really thought like that was going to be the difference for Rutgers at the end of the season, why we were going to be talking about them being somewhere between a 6 and an 8 seed, the way they had started the year and without Caleb and how great they looked. And then it's like, oh, well, this is just extra stuff. Cause now Cliff doesn't have to play as much. They can go a little small sometimes. I mean, he just hasn't been very good these last couple of months offensively. Same with Montez Mathis, but a hell of a night. I mean, you couldn't pick a better time to step on up if you're Caleb McConnell. Also, shout out to my guy, Jacob Young, because dude was just, again, just the most fun guy on the court last night. And I just love how he pisses everybody off still.
This is why pregame analysis is pretty much always completely useless, because there is not a person on earth other than like Caleb McConnell who going into that game thought that Rutgers' best player was going to be Caleb McConnell. And he was their best player. Like it wasn't just like a thing where he hit a couple of shots or he grabbed a couple of rebounds. He was Rutgers' best player in that game, and it is crazy. Like, who saw that coming? Like we've seen him have big games before, but the fact that in that spot after he has been bad this year, like I don't know if Rutgers fans realize this. He, last I checked, was shooting under 30% from the floor this season. And, you know, the back injury and just kind of coming back when no one expected him to play and the pandemic and all that. But like, he had been bad most of this season. And for him to step up like that is just crazy.
Yeah, it's like, couldn't have happened at a better time. I would love to talk about reactions post game, the fun of this now, because again, you know, I'm personally, I was not going to say it. I didn't think it was the time for it. Now that they've won, I can kind of say it. I would have been one of those, I don't know if I would have said it right away if they lost last night, but this would have been a very disappointing season having the talent that they have to finally break the streak and not figure out a way to win a first round game. It's great that we don't have to get into that argument anymore. I'm very happy about that. It's great that we can kind of focus the attention on the fact that you're playing with house money right now. That's the cool thing. And I really could say this, I really mean it. We could see a 2014 Louisville-style game against Houston, and I will not care. I really will not care.
You won't care if Rutgers
will
loses
not
90,
care.
92-31?
I've said it in text to a bunch of friends today. They were all asking, oh, are you getting greedy now? You getting greedy? I'm like, of course I want them winning and going to the Sweet 16. We'll talk about it. We've got a couple of good responses to your tweet asking for some topics for this emergency episode. Me personally, I am totally content. Last night, my feeling now is very similar to 2005 Rutgers football when they made the bowl game and they went down to Arizona. I know they didn't win that game, but just the way they played, the season just felt like it was a success. You knew there were brighter days ahead. The difference with this one is that we don't know what lies ahead next year. We've talked about the talent, who's coming back, who's not, and you're not guaranteed this again. For them to get the win, It made it all good. It's all good. It's fine. I could get past the 5-game losing streak. I can get past them not probably playing up to the ability that they should. They won an NCAA tournament game. That's all I wanted. I will not care if they get blown out against Houston. I expect it. I do expect it. They are really good.
Yeah. If you're going to go there, I wasn't going to go all negative. But I said this yesterday. I was like, just win this game tonight. And if they do win, I expect them to get destroyed by Houston, but
and that's not a knock on Rutgers. That's talking about Houston.
It doesn't matter. Like, wait, what did you say?
I don't think they'll get destroyed,
and they might. And they might not. And they might not. Again, that doesn't. All my point is it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter to me.
I feel like you exaggerated when you said 2014 Louisville, because if they lose 92-31. Like, I feel like there's a little bit of embarrassment.
All right, I should say more of what we saw last week against Illinois, where it was never close, and Illinois could have pulled away and probably should have won by 30, 35.
There's a difference between losing by 25 and by 60.
Great. Excellent point. Mathematically, yes, there is. In my mind, there might not be.
Hear me out on why they will get destroyed by Houston. Houston's best trait is their defense, right? They have a very good defense, just as Clemson did. Rutgers is not a good offensive team, especially in the half court. They're not efficient. They kind of take the same shots regardless because that's how their offense is predicated. If they're just going to struggle to get good shots and score against like any defense, why does it matter if it's a good defense? I'd be more worried if Houston was a really good offensive team and they'd have trouble scoring to keep up with them.
They are a fantastic. When we said they're Steve Peichel.
This shows you my level of preparation, though.
No, it's fine. It's fine. All and Brian, there's a very good preview and scouting report on Houston. And it's just the fact they're top 15 in both categories, Mike, in terms of offensive and defensive efficiency. They are the only teams besides Baylor, Gonzaga, and Michigan, I believe, who are in like the top 13 in both categories, something along those lines. They are a very, very, very good. I mean, because of yesterday's win, I think they're 25-3 right now. I mean, I don't care what conference you're in. That's good.
If Houston was like named UConn or like had some like name recognition, you would people would know more about Houston. They've kind of flown under the radar all season. I've watched.
I just know they have Kelvin Sampson.
They do, and they're Houston. They had Phi Slamma Jamma. I think we'll hear about that. By the way, how about they went the entire broadcast last night? Spiro Dedis and Brendan Haywood, whoever who was the Lauren Shahadi was the sideline reporter. They all somehow went the entire game without mentioning that Miles Johnson is an engineer. Holy shit! Upset of the tournament, not Oral Roberts, okay, beating Ohio State. The upset of the tournament is them not mentioning that Miles Johnson's an engineer.
I mean, the whole thing was awesome. It was great. I got to I did FaceTime with Danny probably about 45 minutes after he left the arena. He got his five thoughts out and everything.
Or 45 minutes or 45 minutes after?
I think 45 minutes after. And it was awesome.
Sitting
you know,
next to Bernie on the bench.
Really, really happy for, again, we've said, people who listen to us know. My first thought was with the players. This is the coolest thing for all the shit that they've gone through to just it's amazing. For the fans, this was really cool. It was just super cool for everybody to, I got like texts from coworkers who don't typically reach out to me, who's like, watched it. That was awesome. You got to be going crazy. So soak this one in for what you can right now. Especially for the Dannys of the world. It was just really cool. The celebration videos from Danny never get tired. They never get tired.
So if you haven't seen it, go to our Twitter account. Danny's brother has been sending us updates and photos and stuff from their trip to Indianapolis. And it's Danny celebrating after the game. He's so tense. Now, Adam pointed out something, and it's that Danny's afraid of heights. So he didn't want to get – and they're in the first row on the upper deck, so he didn't want to get too close to the edge. But he's so tense. I'm afraid he's going to like pull a muscle or like poop himself. Like he's just got to,
looks constipated a little bit. He looks a little backed up with the celebrations, but yeah, there was no doubt that like last night was mainly a mix of heights. As somebody who also doesn't like heights, I know that feeling when you're in the front row of this. I mean, you're not going to fall over, but you feel like you're going to fall over. And by the way, wouldn't have been the worst thing, too, if you're a Rutgers fan last night, like if that was me. I mean, I don't know. You go out on top. If that's the worst thing, I saw him win an NCAA tournament game. Fall over the glass railing is not the worst thing. all right. So let's take a few, questions or opinions from Max. You sent out a tweet saying that we were recording. Send questions. So the first one from our buddy Jack, who made the fantastic Photoshop of Danny on the park bench sitting next to Bernie and Chris Christie, would like to know, can we now disavow Ohio State, Purdue, and Michigan State from the Big Ten? I think we can.
Yeah, I agree. I think the funniest thing in the world would be like everyone from the Big Ten losing except for Rutgers. You know, not that's because of all the Rutgers doesn't belong in the Big Ten, but just because like I feel like the Big Ten always kind of underperforms in the tournament relative to how people talk about the Big Ten as the best conference in the country. When's the last time the Big Ten won a national title? When did Michigan State win?
That was in the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It was like 2002 or somewhere along those lines. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think we should start having the conversation. Should we kick Ohio State out of the Big Ten?
I'm on board with that. Another question from Chris Nowoski from our friends at Rivals. Wanted to know, he wrote a story on the Jacob Young Houston storyline. We're going to hear that a lot because of his dad playing for Houston. What nickname would you give Jacob Young right now?
I don't know. I feel like it has to happen. I feel like it has to happen naturally. I don't really have any ideas.
I would go with the Nat. It's just that annoying thing that's always by you that you're trying to just swat away and you just cannot get rid of it. And you think you've gotten rid of it and it always comes back and it's a pesky little bugger. And that's what Jacob Young does to everybody. And again, it is still the funny. We finally have that guy in a Rutgers team who everybody hates, who everybody just wants to see something bad happen to. And we have that guy.
The Scarlet Nat.
And it's awesome. The Scarlet Nat. Yes, that is the Scarlet Nat. That is good. If Rutgers beats Houston, where does this tournament rank among Rutgers sports?
That's hard. I mean, I think that the peak of Rutgers sports is, and I know people will be like, oh, the wrestlers winning the national champions. So the peak of Rutgers sports is the getting to number six in the BCS in 2006. That's the peak, beating Louisville, being the center of the college football world. Because when you have these conversations, like, you have to have them in the context of the notoriety of the sport, right? Like, I'm sure there's some like they won a fencing national championship. Isn't that the biggest deal? Like, no, we're going to talk about this in the context of like the what people know Rutgers sports for. And as great as winning a tournament game, the question was if they beat Houston.
If they beat Houston, where would this rank first among Rutgers sports? I agree. There's two different ways to look at this.
I think to surpass Louisville in 2006, as far as like maybe being in like the forefront of people's minds when they think of Rutgers sports, they got to get to the Final Four in order to overcome that. And that's not to say that like getting to the Sweet 16 isn't a big deal, but we're talking like, I think that with time you tend to forget how big of a deal that was, and you can't really overstate this. Rutgers football was for a couple of weeks the national story of sports. And it was, I mean, Mike and the Mad Dog were at Rutgers Stadium doing a show for
a live show.
Good afternoon, everybody! Welcome to Piscataway!
And so like
that was amazing.
And so one of the things that happens, and you know, we've joked about this so much, is that the miracle of the last 30, or the miracle is not Rutgers making the NCAA tournament. The miracle is that they somehow failed to meet the minimum requirements for being a major conference college basketball team for so long. And so like, while getting to the Sweet 16 is awesome, it's also just something you kind of expect to do sometimes when you're at this level. So no, like it would take a long time or a lot of things. I think getting to the Final Four for it to be put above beating Louisville in 06.
Yeah, yes. I mean, there's no, like, and the sports especially make it because so, like, different, right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, but also like, it's just in terms of notoriety, like, you have a full week of promotion for the program then, and then you get to say for the next like 5 years, hey guys, we made a Final Four. We didn't, you know, like, I would say the amount of churn every year in terms of like top 10, top 15 teams inside the polls, like in college football, you probably have like what, 20 teams make a top 10 in any given season, right? Like, maybe more. You get to say you're a Final Four, you hang a banner for that. There's no banner hanging at Rutgers Stadium for beating Louisville.
I mean,
but there
even,
should be.
Even better, you got the Texas Bowl painting banner on the side. But the difference too is, like, think about it. We're taping this right now, and there are already two, if not three, games going on for the third day of the tournament right now. Like, it's forgotten. Rutgers was the storyline for 10, 15 minutes last night. It, within Rutgers world, it's awesome. I think if they beat Houston, I mean, it would give them a Sweet 16. I mean, it probably vaults it into easily the top five big things of all time within Rutgers sports, being 2006 Louisville, the 1976 Final Four run, the women's Final Four when we were at school is in my top three at least. I think those are pretty big things. From a national perspective, like you said, nobody – I mean, think about it. Clemson made a Sweet 16 run 2 years ago, or 3 years ago it was, you know, and it kind of surprised everybody. They were picked, I think, to finish 13th or something that year in the ACC. So, like, you make a Sweet 16, that's a school thing only. You're forgotten very quickly. You know, it's you got to make the George Mason-type run or whatever it is to a Final Four. And unless you're UMBC, who's a 16 beating a 1, you get forgotten in the lore of college basketball. You got in terms of national exposure, the only way this team really gets remembered outside of Rutgers is if they made a Final Four. If they get to the Sweet 16 within Rutgers history, it definitely sneaks in. It gets into the top five.
I think it helps they'd make it to the Sweet 16 as a double-digit seed.
Yes, they would beat Houston as a huge upset.
Perversely, that would be less impressive.
They would have to beat a 1 in the second round game. That might be more impressive.
Who's the one who beat Kansas? Was that Northern Iowa a few years ago?
Yes.
As an 8 seed?
Ali Farouk Manesh.
Yes.
Years ago. The thing about you beat Houston and you get to the Sweet 16, you kind of hope that that's not something you look back on 15 years from now and that was kind of the best that you did as a team in the Big Ten. You hope that you might get to another, you get to another Sweet 16 or you get to the Elite Eight. Whereas with Rutgers football and as far as accomplishments and kind of looking at it through a prism of the history of Rutgers sports, you kind of know that that moment will never be replicated, right? You might have a season where we can save the football, future talk for a different time, but Rutgers, that's the peak. Rutgers football will never get to that point where you're the national story and you're that highly ranked. And whereas with basketball, if you win, you still hope that there are higher peaks than getting into the NCAA tournament as a 10 seed and getting to the Sweet 16. So are there any more questions? Along the same line as the Jacob Young question, what would be a Rutgers version of the moniker Phi Slamma Jamma? So we need a nickname for the Rutgers team, for this team. I don't know. That's hard. Nicknames are hard. Though we did come up with the Scarlet Gnat.
That was impressive on top of our head.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think on that one.
The Scarlet Slammers.
We haven't talked about it. That dunk by Ron Harper Jr. in the first half. Man,
what was the better dunk this week for Rutgers? Ron Harper Jr. or Gio on Rothstein?
We haven't even gotten to that.
I was just about to say it's a great segue. That's a great segue if we want to get a really quick chat in terms of what the hell is going on with these guys essentially being bubbled up. And Rutgers, I mean, the impressive thing is just them keeping their focus with everything that was going on, being able to do two crazy things at once. Good for them. Good for them being able to not just be, basketball players and, go for the big dogs, take down the evil empire that is the NCAA too. I didn't think they could do both at the same time. They proved me wrong.
How about the NCAA messing up the simplest thing in the world and just thinking that they were going to get away with giving the women's basketball tournament, not giving them a weight room and the arrogance of these fucking people to just never have any tact and there's no punishment for it. There's no penalty, right? Everyone gets mad at them and, they're fixing it. And Adam was telling me earlier, I haven't seen the pictures yet about how garish and nice the women's weight room.
Yeah. All of a sudden they have room, by the way, go check out Holly Rowe's Twitter account, because all of a sudden they've got beautiful drapes and uplighting in this now new fancy event space gymnasium for all the women at their NCAA tournament down in Texas.
Do they have PCR tests for them yet?
That I don't know. That was another thing that was just amazing. Like nobody was going to find out that the women were getting antigen testing and the men were getting PCR testing. What are we doing?
Not, I don't know. It goes worse than that. I don't know if you saw the story in The Athletic, how they had to make, essentially, if you're a head coach on a staff, as a part of your traveling party for a women's basketball team, if you're a new mom who was breastfeeding their new child. The child
they were counting the kid.
As part of your traveling party.
I mean,
like the NCAA could not be any more blatantly disrespectful towards women this year.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Title IX champion and lover of equality Jerry Carino has said nothing about any of this. Just wanted to throw that out there.
No, he did write. Oh, not about the women. I don't think he said any. Yeah, that's true. He hasn't said anything about the women.
I just want to throw that out.
That's fair. That's a fair lob out there. It is really awesome now that my favorite team in Rutgers basketball history also won an NCAA tournament, and I'm still more jacked about how awesome they are in terms of just being like, fuck you to the NCAA. I'm still, I thought, like, deep down, I was like, if they win an NCAA tournament game, it's going to be stupid sports fan who cares more about that. I'm like, Geo Baker was still tweeting about that this morning. They won last night, still going at the NCAA. This is my favorite team ever.
Yeah, we've covered this so much, but like, think about someone like Geo Baker who has this stage and has this platform, and now like he has this name recognition. How well he could do, like starting like a basketball camp, right? Like Geo Baker, like, that's something he's talked about, right? Like how he would have liked to have done that. And he is still on it and still like out there, you know, him and I think Jordan Bohannon and who was the third player?
Isaiah
Livers
from Michigan, as far as at the forefront. And like, it's just interesting because the NCAA, I mean, there's so many different places you could go with this. But one thing that I think that I said how it doesn't cost the NCAA anything to mess up this stuff with the women's tournament and everything. I think the only way, and it's not in like an obvious direct way, is that they're really tempting fate, because we could talk to a lawyer at some point, but like
Raj
or whoever. No, I mean like an I mean like an actual like expert on antitrust stuff, because like what they're doing, what the NCAA is doing is obviously like an antitrust violation, right? Like all of this is a racket. And if you get a willing antitrust division of the Justice Department that is willing to go after the NCAA, like the NCAA could be really fucked, right? And so by constantly kind of embarrassing yourself publicly, you make it easier eventually for someone in the government to just say, fuck, like, you know what I mean? You make it easier and easier to go after the NCAA because it's sitting there, right? There is no way that the way that the NCAA is structured and all of this crap is not an obvious, like, price, wage fixing and cartels and monopolies. And like, it's not an obvious antitrust violation. And all it's going to take is for the federal government to really go after them. And you have to stop kind of poking at your goodwill eventually, right? Like eventually someone is going to go after them, right? And so
you
it's
just
like
said it, all it takes is for the government to do something, so I think they're good.
could be a while, but it, like I said, it's really cool in the sense of, you know, they're being outspoken. Listen, I mean, the funny thing too is like, is there nobody in the NCAA who like thought for a second, maybe we should just give them like this really big, crazy entertainment center, not like just some minor league baseball field. Like, get like these crazy flat screen TVs, set up some game streaming stuff, bring in like a bunch of food trucks or something, and like make them not have the time to sit around and be like, how can we band together and actually realize that we have the power? Like, all you need to do is kiss the player's ass for like a week. That's all you had to do.
A couple of Xboxes. A couple of Xboxes. An extra hotel room, a couple of Xboxes, a ping pong table, like
something.
Something. Show that you like it. Show that they're
here. Here's the minor league field where you can go to have rec time, guys. You get a half an hour a day. Go enjoy.
In the yard.
Afterwards, please go to the cafeteria, pick up your shitty tray of food, and go ahead and eat it in silence. Total silence. Go ahead and do that. I mean, it's just amazing. And you know what? The funny thing is, the greatest thing would be, again, is that Rutgers continues to make some historic run here, and these guys have the balls to do. Again, you could read The Athletic and Nicole Auerbach's story in terms of the Big Ten guys kind of leading this thing, and they've hinted at it. They are thinking in some ways down the line in a bigger round of doing something. What that is, we don't know. It's just it's an entertaining idea. Well, especially yeah, like, for this podcast.
They don't have to like refuse to play the game, but they could delay the game a little bit. You know what I mean? Like Geo Baker could get out there and demand a microphone, right? What are they going to do? Like, I want the PA mic. I want to say some words. You're going to broadcast like you know what I mean? Cuz like it's going to be really hard to like, you know, work your whole life to get to this moment and then not play the actual game. You could delay it a little bit. Listen, like you could yeah.
Rutgers won a game, so now they can go ahead and protest and not play the next one, and no one can be angry.
What would be really funny, and I actually think that this is going to happen because of the way I think the game tomorrow is going to go, and imagine a scenario where Rutgers starts losing, and there's a lot of fouls called on Rutgers. The fans are going to start saying, it's rigged against Rutgers. They don't want them to advance. They don't want Geo Baker to cause any more of a ruckus, and they're obviously trying to make them lose. It's a conspiracy. The Big Ten tried to keep Rutgers out. Now the NCAA is anti-Rutgers. And yeah. This is obviously what's happening. There is no scenario. And I'm going to have to call up our friends at Rutgers Sports Outsider and see if they can dig anything up.
The big hint tomorrow is whether or not Bo Borowski is on this game. If he is, we know the fix is in. And we're going to have to do something about it. We're going to have to put our foot down and stand up to the NCAA and back up our players. That's what's going to happen. All right. I mean, this was it's a fun Saturday. I didn't know. You know, it's great that we were able to do this. Rutgers has won an NCAA tournament game for the first time in 38 years. Are we all going out today? Last question for me. Then I really don't have anything else to say. We all have to go and get sequin jackets now, right? Because that guy. Apparently, I don't have a direct connection. I have a very good friend who apparently knows sequin jacket guy.
And they make it to the Sweet 16. You got to get them.
I mean, Max, am I wrong that now Rutgers next year, I mean, I don't want them to continue to waste money on things, not the players, but they need to give out one night sequin jackets to the student section.
Sequin jacket night?
Sequin jacket night.
I like it.
Sounds expensive.
How badly was CBS just trying to make sequin jacket guy a thing?
That was great. I mean, we got some great footage out of it. I'm all for it. Apparently, he's an employee at the tavern on George Street or whatever. Because they were tweeting today whether or not they should. He called out sick already for Sunday. Obviously, I mean, he's going to be going to the game, we assume, and they wanted to know whether or not they should give him off. I mean, I want to respond. I mean, give him paid time off too. Why don't you at this point? I mean, come on. But yeah, sequin jacket guy, sequin jacket night at the rack on batter night.
you know what sucks just because of the time we had to do this
we couldn't get Danny on.
We'll get him
this week as he's driving back from Indy.
There is the possibility here of what we could get post Sunday
if they win,
if they pulled off the miracle. That could be one for the ages with Danny.
High on adrenaline.
What we have to do is we have to, because Danny says he's coming back, right? You know, Passover is coming up.
To New Jersey? Jersey.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, when is Passover?
I don't know. I mean, you expect me to know something like that?
I believe it's the 27th and 28th of March.
Sure. But, like, we have to convince him to stay, right?
He has to. I don't understand why he'd come back.
Like, you know, I'm pretty sure the story of Passover is
wandering the desert of Indianapolis for 40 years.
Would command him to stay in Indianapolis. Now, I don't know what you do in Indianapolis. And he, I guess he asked, but he could work remotely. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
Listen, man, let's be honest. When Rutgers makes the Sweet 16, his family should come to him in Indy. He shouldn't have to go back and forth. Like,
Passover should come to him.
Seder in the tiny house. Seder in the tiny house. And we'd be all good. All right. I think this was a lot of fun. Good emergency podcast episode. Rutgers finds a way to beat Clemson. They get Houston. Big win for me. It's a 7:10 tip off. I don't have to be up until, I think I wound up going to bed at 2:00 in the morning. That's crazy for me. I made it up all the way to 2:00 in the morning. I'm pretty much on adrenaline after that.
In retrospect, you talked to Danny and his brother last night. You should have recorded that in retrospect.
How do you do that on your, never mind. Forget it. The technical aspect.
Yes,
it was really quick. And I just wanted to basically congratulate him. Cause as we said, for all the, we do poke at Danny a lot of times, we have fun. I like could not have felt any better last night. Like for him to be there with his brother is really, 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 really cool.
Yeah, I do. I mean, yeah. And this obviously washes over you and we've covered this so many times, but like, you know, it didn't take long for me to go, man, this sucks. This fucking sucks that we can't be there. And it's during the pandemic and this weird bubble. And, you know, obviously happy for Danny, but like, man, like just the fact that Rutgers fans didn't get to experience this in the way that you want to experience this. And we'll never get this back. And I don't mean that to, I'm not trying to be a downer. I'm just kind of like more processing.
Not just
like,
facts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of this thing that's there where it's like, man, like we really didn't get to experience this. We really didn't get to like see the joy on Danny's face or walk, you know, yell at sequin jacket guy. Right.
What do we got? We got 2.5 weeks or so. I mean, we can get to like 100% capacity in Indiana for the Final Four. We can still got a chance. All right. Enjoy the game against Houston, fellas.
Yep. Pay the players.
I'm just going to play it straight up. Only about a 6-second differential between the shot clock and the game clock. Now here comes the trap. Tyson coming over to help Baker. Underneath, dangerous pass. He gets it there. And it's a two-possession lead for the Spurs. What an incredible sequence. On the other end, Harper with an excellent defense, gets his hand on the ball. This one, though, is in the book. Jacob Young dribbles it out.
These kids are so excited. They're so happy.